Well, what a passage. Wonderful. What a privilege to speak about Jesus. Matthew must have had some problem deciding what to include in his gospel. So we're going to focus on Matthew's gospel, chapter 8. But as we do so, as we tune in to this theme and look at this great and wonderful person of Jesus, let me just take you back a couple of chapters to chapter 4. I think you were in chapter 4 last week, and just the last few verses, just to get context there, the end of chapter 4 in verse 23. Jesus went throughout Galilee teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness among the people. News about him spread all over Syria, and the people brought to him all who were ill with various diseases, those suffering pain, severe pain, and the demon-possessed, and the epileptics, and the paralytics, and he healed them. Large crowds from Galilee and Decapolis, Jerusalem, Judea, and the region across the Jordan followed him. Wow. If we had this in the big screen today, I'm sure we'd be constantly saying, wow. It's a wow passage, isn't it? Yes, word was out that there was something amazing happening down in Galilee. This was something big. We're not talking hundreds of people, we're talking thousands of people. This man Jesus attracted crowds of people from all over the country. Some obviously had travelled many miles. They'd come over from the coast at the Mediterranean. They'd come from the south up in the hills of Judea. They'd come across in foreign territory. They'd come to see and to hear this man Jesus. You see, Jesus preached hope about a kingdom and a future. And if we could enter into the political situation of that time, that was a message people wanted to hear. Jesus was a man, we could say, with the common touch. His dress and his speech was that of the local artisan. He was, in fact, the carpenter. But everyone would be asking, who is this man? He taught what I would say was good common sense and challenged people to live from the heart, not according to the clothes they wear or from their behavior or their position. He was a man of compassion for the disabled and for those who had hopeless medical conditions. He tackled the evil spirits head on, and with one word he set the oppressed free. This was Jesus. You could listen to this man, not just for the 20-minute synagogue sermon, but a whole day on the hillside. The Sermon on the Mount in chapters 5, 6, and 7 is just so rich, and I'm sure you'll come back to that. It's so relevant to everyone today. There the audience sat in a grassy amphitheater listening to this local carpenter teacher. And if you visit that area, you'll find they're just outside of the town. That area, which would no doubt be the place, a sort of bowl-shaped, grassy-shaped amphitheater, his voice would carry for all those hours that he spoke to them. So today, as we look at chapter 8, if you like, it's a day in the life of Jesus. Matthew picks a few incidents, some only lasting a couple of minutes really, but having a powerful message for us, for each one of us today. And as I say, it must have been pretty difficult for Matthew to decide which of all the incidents will I put on paper. Well, what a joy to have it. We want to focus on Jesus, on his authority, and yet in his sincere compassion. The two combine together in an amazing way. Also running through this chapter and into chapter 9, of course, is a matter of faith. It surfaces each time, and we would want that to be so for us today. Why? Because faith is an absolute confidence and trust that Jesus is interested in me, in my personal trauma, in me as a person, and he's willing and he's able to touch
me where I am today. That is faith. It's this absolute confidence and trust. And we're going to see that coming through in the people that came and encountered Jesus. Look at the first encounter we have in chapter 8. And we picture this scene of Jesus with hundreds of people crowding around as they came down the hill above Capernaum, down towards the town, having left the hillside behind. Well, I suppose in this day and age, he would be mobbed by kids holding out pieces of paper or their baseball caps wanting an autograph. But there it was, the weak and the weary asking for a touch of his hand. But pushing through the crowd was a man who should not have been there. Chapter 8 and verse 2 says, a man with leprosy came and knelt before him. Some translations say, and worshipped him. This is all he said. Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Very significant words. As I said, the man should not have been there. He should not have been there. The disease was, as we say in farming, a notifiable disease. There were rules that had existed for hundreds of years. Leprosy excluded the sufferer from society, from family, from employment, from the synagogue. It totally excluded this man. Separation and stigma is what followed this disease. Notice the man said, if you're willing, you can make me clean. He didn't say, if you're willing, you can heal me. The word was very important. It was chosen carefully. To understand the significance, perhaps you need to go back in Jewish history, back to Leviticus chapter 14. Jewish law demanded that anyone showing symptoms of leprosy be inspected by the religious leader. If confirmed, the person was deemed to be unclean and had to leave home and be isolated to a leper colony. Tough, wasn't it? If the person appeared in public, they had to call out, unclean, unclean. In some historical writings, it says they also rang a bell. People would move away to the other side of the street. To be unclean was to be living in a dead body for a Jew. No one touched a dead body, or they became ceremonially unclean. Notice, this man had faith. He had no doubt that Jesus could heal him. The question in his mind, was he willing? And so he says, if you are willing, you can make me clean. How does Jesus respond? He reaches out and does the unthinkable. He touched him. Listen to what Max Lucado says in his book, Just Like Jesus. And if in this series you wanted a little textbook to encourage you, I recommend Max Lucado's Just Like Jesus. What does he say? Max imagines himself in this man's shoes. And this is what he says. For 5 years, no one touched me. No one. Not one person. Not my wife. Not my child. Not my friends. No one touched me. They saw me. They spoke to me. I sensed love in their voices. I saw concern in their eyes. But I didn't feel their touch. There was no touch. Not once. No one touched me. What is common to you, I coveted. Handshakes, warm embraces, a tap on the shoulder to get my attention, a kiss on my lips to steal my heart. Such moments were taken from my world. No one touched me. No one bumped into me. What I would have given to be bumped into, to be caught in a crowd, for my shoulder to brush against another's. But for 5 years, it has not happened. How could it? I was not allowed on the streets. Even the rabbis kept their distance from me. I was not permitted in my synagogue, not even welcome in my house. I was untouchable. I was a leper. And no one touched me until
today. Jesus.
You see, Jesus did the unthinkable. He touched him. That is Jesus. He reaches out. Yes, Jesus touched the man. And Jesus deals with his social exclusion. It's interesting what he says then to him. He instructed the man to follow the Jewish law and go back to the religious leader, probably with a couple of doves, to get a confirmation and a clean bill of health declared so that he was no longer socially an outcast. I'm not quite sure why Jesus says don't tell anyone the way, but that was what he said. It was in order that he would now be included rather than excluded. If he had just gone off skipping and jumping and telling people I'm clean, he would still have been, from a religious point of view, excluded. So Jesus included him. He took action to ensure that he was no longer excluded, pushed out. Wonder why does Matthew include this particular incident? You see, he's again demonstrating that Jesus had time for the disabled and for those on the edge of social life. Jesus cares about those whose case seems hopeless and whose hearts have lost hope. And Jesus is unchanging. What he was then, he is today. Jesus identifies with the downcast and the depressed. Jesus is today concerned with those who are excluded and shut out. One touch heals and welcomes the friendless and forsaken. But what words? We hear him say, I am willing. The man with leprosy says, are you willing? Immediately Jesus says, I am willing. And this tells us about the heart of Jesus. Sometimes you might come with prayer and you say, I wonder if Jesus is willing to meet with me. His answer will always be, I'm willing. But what about our position today with regard to those who are on the edge or excluded? I found this a big challenge because the passage really is speaking to us about how we respond to those who are socially excluded for whatever reason. Our prejudice, maybe fear, maybe judgment. Back in the summer, I usually go for an early morning walk and often along the canal, and there was a couple who were just gathering their things together, having slept under a canal bridge. Girl was a teenager, maybe 17 or 18. The guy was maybe 20, 22, something like that. And I noticed they're just gathering up their sleeping bag. And they had a dog. And I thought, pretty rough having to sleep rough, isn't it? Under a canal bridge, just on the path. And the thought went through my mind during the day, you never said anything, did you? I suppose I was a bit embarrassed or whatever. But later in the day, in the evening, I was walking over to Leamington to post some letters, just getting exercise. And I was going through the bandstand park just beside the pump rooms. And sitting on a seat was this couple with a dog, lots of clothes. They were clean, no bottles of cider. They're just sitting there. And so I felt, having thought about it during the day, I can't walk past this couple. But the question is, what do you say? And I stopped and I said, do you think you'll have a warmer bed tonight? And sort of startled, looked at me and they said, well, how do you know? I said, well, I happened to see you this morning gathering your things up under the canal bridge. They said, no, we're going back there. And I said, what about shelter? And they said, well, we've got a dog and can't get shelter. And I don't know what their story was, and I don't suppose it's an unusual story, because there are those in our society who are excluded for whatever reason. And it's so easy to form a judgment. I suppose my natural inclinations say this guy looks an able-bodied sort of fella, and unemployment in Leamington is less than 2%. Why are you sitting here? You see, that's the human side, isn't it? rather than seeing the condition of the and the situation and saying, what can I do? What could I do? I didn't even have any money in my pocket, so I couldn't even do the easy thing of taking out a note. I said, well, do you know about Steph and Jeff's bus that comes? And no, they didn't know about that. But even that, as it turned out, that was the week that Steph and Jeff were on holiday. There wasn't even a bus that night. And so they went back to their canal bridge. And I'm left thinking, what should I have done? What could I have done? And it has bugged me a long time. And yet it seems the Lord brings circumstances into a life like that to say, what would Jesus have done? And you see, the leper is so important to us to say, look, Jesus did not just speak the word, he did the unthinkable. And maybe for us, for those for whatever reason are excluded, and right from bullying in schools right through, people get excluded. And we can be part of that exclusion process, even by eyeballing someone and saying good morning, because for whatever reason we make a judgment as we walk up to them. And the next person we meet, we say good morning, and we've made a judgment. God would say to each one of us, where is your compassion? The compassion that Jesus had. Moving on in the chapter, we see the authority of Jesus demonstrated. He meets another outsider, senior officer in the Roman army. His request is not for himself, but for a seriously ill servant. He came to Jesus simply to ask for help. Note that Jesus was willing to go out of his way to visit a Gentile home. No wonder the Jews watching him were angry. That was out of court. But observe the faith of the Roman soldier. He says, I don't deserve to have you come into my house. What an interesting statement. You're a third of his position in society. He would be proud to have him. Quite the opposite. In fact, he's saying, you only need to speak the word, and I believe it will be done. Then we have an interesting little dialogue there. He illustrates his confidence by talking about his own authority. One word from me, and people move. That's what he was saying. I'm a man of authority. I only need to speak the word. One word from you, Jesus, is all that's needed. That's what he was saying. One word from you. He recognized the authority of this man, Jesus. Then we read an amazing statement that I don't think you will read anywhere else in the Gospels. It says, Jesus was astonished. Isn't that interesting? Jesus was astonished. What an interesting state to be. He was astonished. Why? About the man's faith. Such amazing faith. Jesus was astonished. His faith was rewarded. Again, we come back to what does Jesus do? It's a word. He says, go and it will be done just as you believed it would. Amazing, isn't it? Now, was there any hesitance? Did the man say, hold on a minute? No. That was it. That was all that was needed. And it was recorded that the man was healed at that very moment. You see, real time for Jesus is real time. And when he speaks, it happens. And when we're praying today for someone at the other side of the world, whatever their clock says, in real time, God will answer. And God does answer. He was healed. The man was healed. I've often wondered how this Roman soldier got such faith. He wouldn't go to the synagogue, I don't expect. I don't know. But we don't know. But I assume that he had first-hand experience. You see, faith comes from that basis of first-hand experience. Maybe he had been on the hillside listening. Maybe he had seen the miracles which Jesus had performed. But above all, somehow he recognized the divine authority of Jesus to say the words he said. His faith astonished Jesus. Oh, that mine would. As we follow Jesus down the street into Capernaum, we come to Peter's house. Here we see just how Jesus could be touched with concern. Now this is a silent miracle. It's a very interesting miracle. Peter's mother-in-law is stretched out with a severe fever. Remember, no vaccines, no antibiotics, fever was often fatal. But no word is spoken. Not Peter, not Peter's wife, not the lady herself, not even Jesus. Not a word. What happens? Only a light touch of her hand, and the fever's gone. What do you find? No convalescence. She instantly was back to her waitressing. Immediately. That's the Jesus that we worship. He's got a heart, but he also has a mind to bless with his touch. Sometimes we are blessed and we don't even know what happened. Maybe we didn't even pray, nobody else prayed, but Jesus just simply wanted to bless you, his children. And he does, I feel he does often. We just get a touch from the Master that lifts us on our feet. Instead of being incapacitated, maybe in service, Jesus can touch us and get us on our feet into service. Don't we need it? The evening healing session was significant. And it says that with a word, he drove out evil spirits and healed the sick. It seems to me that the power of the word is so prominent in what Jesus did. He speaks and it happens. The word of Jesus. And there were many who came. It was a busy place, Capernaum. And Capernaum was a busy place because Capernaum lay on a north-south busy route all the way down from Egypt, all the way back up to Iraq, or just above Capernaum. You could turn left and you'd go over the hills into Syria, into to the Med towns, or you could turn right and go on up to what we would call Iraq. It was cosmopolitan. It wasn't a Jewish enclave. It wasn't a West Bank town. It was a whole mixture of nationalities. And Jesus chose to minister there for many reasons, because he knew that he was going to touch the lives of many nationalities. So it wasn't just the fact that he was touching the lives of the disabled, he was touching the lives of people who would take the message to many countries. The question of faith surfaces again when the disciples decide to take a boat ride over the lake, just a few short miles over Galilee. Some of them were local fishermen. They knew the ropes. Their faith was about to be put to the test. It was. Out of the blue, maybe it was out of the blue, the sun shining over behind the Galilean hills, comes a mini hurricane. Maybe it wasn't so mini, and threatened to upturn the boat. This is not unusual, still happens. The way the Rift Valley is, the Galilee Valley right down to the Red Sea, these storms still blow up without any warning. Well, what happens? The disciples panic. Now, I'm not sure if James and John even tried to calm the others, saying, we can handle this. But we just find that they've panicked. But Jesus was sleeping. Well, he had a busy time. And he was asleep. They obviously shake him and wake him and say, we're going to drown. We've seen in recent days the power of waves. These fishermen knew what can happen, how quickly a boat can be turned up. Well, Jesus responds, doesn't he? What does he say? It's like a rebuke. We need to hear the tone of his voice to know how strong this rebuke is. It might have been with a bit of a chuckle. Oh, boys. You know, faith. Or it might have been a little stronger. Come on. You've seen me. You've seen what can happen. Why don't you trust me? You have little faith. Why are you so afraid? Yes, fear drives out faith. There's no doubt at all that we find ourselves in situations of anxiety and somehow our faith is eroded. And we lose that sense of confidence. I would have been afraid. Most of us would have been afraid. So I take on what Jesus said there. It's true. But again, we see the power of the spoken word. He rebuked the wind and the waves, and there was complete calm. Now, it was one thing to stop the wind. It was another thing to stop the waves, because once the waves are moving, it's pretty hard to stop waves instantly. Jesus' power. You see, this is the power of the one who created the wind and the waves. He is God Almighty. No wonder it says the disciples were speechless. What authority? Well, Matthew records a short visit to foreign soil over in the region of the Gadarenes. Now, that wasn't Jewish country, and we might say, why on earth did they go there? There could well have been real trouble. But Jesus went there for an appointment. He had an appointment with two men. We read in this particular passage two men. It's similar to what we read of where there was one mentioned. But these were men who couldn't come to Jesus. We've seen on the other side of the lake hundreds being brought to Jesus or coming under their own steam. They couldn't. Their social exclusion was due to Satan's power over them because they were possessed by evil spirits. This is a reality which we perhaps don't encounter in the manifestation of it today, but it's just as real today. And we should be aware of that. And we should be aware that Jesus' power and his word is still the same today to address evil spirits. The dialogue seems to be between the evil spirits and Jesus, though the men's voices are used. For they immediately recognized who Jesus was, the Son of God. But there was no dialogue as far as Christ was concerned. As far as Jesus was concerned, it would appear that he only used one word. Go. Go. And you see, in terms of the two powers that are against each other, the power of Satan is nothing compared to the word of Jesus. Jesus' word can deal with evil spirits, and he can deal with them today amongst us and in this town. And we should be prepared to take the name of Jesus and take the authority of Jesus to address such when we encounter it. As we study Matthew's gospel, each incident builds a picture of a man with a human heart of compassion, but also a man of divine authority.